Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on the award-winning Close Up Radio, which is a presentation of the Telly Award-winning Close Up Television and Radio. It's good to have you with us today on a Monday. It's also great to welcome back, as we continue our exclusive series, Jason Uribe of Code 3 Consultations, coming to us from Napa, California. You know, just what does it mean to be an expert witness? That's a question that we have for you today, everybody. We're going to answer that, and Jason is going to provide some incredible details about his expertise in that area. It means you have this intimate knowledge and these specific skills that enable you to say what happened at a scene when you weren't even physically on that scene. For competitive motorcycle driver Jason Uribe, that intimate knowledge is of cars and bikes and vehicle mechanics and electrical systems, all of which enable him to analyze and reconstruct accidents and vehicular occurrences on public roads. His skills also come from years of professional riding, driving, and advanced studies in electrical engineering. Jason's quest to investigate and understand accidents began when a good friend of his faced jail time for a vehicular issue. He felt the right tools really could have helped, and the knowledge as well, to clear his friend, about to make that difference in the future, led to that new career path for him and the formation of his blossoming Code 3 consulting practice. As we mentioned last week, Code 3 is a term Jason took from firefighting, where it is used to indicate the severity of an occurrence. Jason is now an expert witness and accident investigator who specializes in vehicular analysis of a car, truck, and motorcycle-related incidents, who carefully determines the probable cause of them and helps clients uncover the truth in court cases. When he was just 3 years old, he attended his first racing event at a local track and was determined to enter the motorsports field as well, and he did, gloriously. The same spirit of determination led him to pursue firefighting and advanced education in electronics, also led him to launch this consultancy. And Jason wants all folks to embrace that positive, stick-to-your-dreams kind of mindset. And he has definitely done that beautifully. It's my pleasure again to welcome him back to Close Up Radio, as on this episode, we're going to be talking about his incomparable experience and mechanical and technical skills. Live and direct from Napa, California, Jason Uribe is our guest for the next 30 minutes on this episode of Close Up Radio. Jason, welcome back to the program. It's a real pleasure to have you here today.
Hey, good morning. Yeah, thank you for having me back on.
Oh, you are very welcome. Again, the conversation we had last week was really terrific, sort of breaking down what you do as an expert witness. Today, I really would love to focus on, again, this incomparable experience that you have and the mechanical and technical skills. Tell our audience, once again, maybe to refresh those who listened to the last week's episode, or maybe new folks who are listening for the first time today, some of those real standout highlights of your career as a driver and racer, and later work that made you such a credible expert.
Yeah, so I would say a few highlights of my racing career would be representing the United States overseas. I did that for roughly 5 years, riding as between one of two and one of five Americans racing in these world-level championships, going all across Europe, going all across the world, and trying to do my best to not only represent my country, but represent my sponsors and my family and all that fun stuff. So that was a very large portion of my life for a very long time. Dedicated basically everything, uprooted my family and went over to Europe and raced motorcycles. And it was one of those things that I'm super thankful to have the opportunity to do. I know not a lot of people get to do that, and I'm very thankful. It taught me a lot, not only as an individual, as a racer, and as a businessman, and being able to see how other countries operate and how other people kind of use different things in different ways is an approach that I try to take to my daily life, and I feel that has made me a better person, and here we are.
That's terrific, and it certainly has, because you've been able to take that experience and help facilitate these occurrences in terms of being an expert witness in such an incredible and in-depth level. You also have this degree in electrical engineering, and you've completed over 8,000 hours of apprenticeship. Tell us about some of the things you learned to master in those studies.
Yeah, so over a five-year course, 8,000-hour apprenticeship in electrical design and engineering, it's one of the things that I take very seriously. And I think the biggest thing that I take away from that is just a different mindset, kind of coming back to the whole mind game. As far as being able to look at a vehicle, being able to look at a project, a machine, whatever it might be, and trying to dissect every little piece, every little bit that goes into making it work. And at first, especially when I started that whole electrical journey, it was something that I had kind of played around with, something that I'd known about but never really gotten super in-depth to. And then 5 years later, here I am, and it's one of those things where it alters the way that I approach everything in life, whether it's for work or whether it's for personal reasons, just being able to look at something, take it apart, and build it in my mind without actually having to do any physical work is probably the biggest takeaway that I've had from it. And it's something that I take into all my cases, being able to look at a crime scene, so to say, being able to look at an accident, look at a car that's been in a wreck, and being able to determine, okay, is this something that could have failed? Is there an electrical component or something mechanically that could have gone wrong that would have led to this type of accident? And a lot of that goes into background research and being able to look at the scene, being able to get statements from people, statements from the driver, obviously, and stuff like that, to try and put together somewhat of a story that would help correlate why, if and why something did fail. And that's really the approach that I learned from that whole 8,000-hour apprenticeship, and that's something I take in my daily life.
That's really terrific. That's such great experience. You know, it goes back even further because you come from a family that's heavily involved in this kind of work as well, right?
Correct. Yeah, my family owns and operates the current fifth generation electrical contracting business, and that's one of those things that I again, it all kind of ties together in what I studied my 5-year apprenticeship as far as being able to not only know how to build something with my hands as far as electrical goes, but being able to understand why and how it goes together is definitely a key role in my life, and it's something I feel I can offer my clients that some others can't.
When you think about it, when you put it in its totality, how do you think all of the experience and the skills sort of come into play when you evaluate a vehicle's mechanical systems?
I think a lot of it comes down to, again, kind of what we said earlier, being able to look at something, being able to look at a car or look at a piece of material that goes into a car, understanding exactly how it works and what its designed purpose is, and then taking it down to a deeper level and determining, okay, well, why does it do this? Why did it fail? If it did fail, why did it fail? Things that could go wrong, potential points of stress, so to say. For example, like if you have something that has a lot of sharp angles, if you have a piece that has a lot of redundant safety systems, while they are fantastic to have and it's always great to have a backup, one of the things that I found is that the more redundancy you have in general, the lesser quality the actual piece might be, which might sound a bit backwards, but for example, so if you have a lock that has three different fail safes, usually that first lock or that primary lock is not going to be as strong as the fail safe would be, which is something that I've discovered recently that I've been looking more into with OEMs and different manufacturers, aftermarket manufacturers, as to why and how I can properly accommodate when I come across these type of scenarios where I do have things like that. But it's definitely one of those things that I've been trying to learn more about, and it's something that always is a good reminder that there's usually more going on that just surface level. It's always beneficial to look deeper into some of these things.
Would you say that you've always been somebody who is curious and you like to sort of figure things out and sort of deduce, you know, the how, what, when, where, who, why?
I would definitely say so. I'd say that's definitely gotten me into some trouble in my younger years, but I think it's something that's a key asset and a key part of my personality now, and I try and use to my advantage.
That's terrific. That's great. I mean, I think it's just terrific that you've been able to take all this experience and expand it further into this very important area of being an expert witness. What are some of the other technical and mechanical components as well of crash analysis that you understand well? You know, sometimes when there is a crash, an accident, whatever, people just see the outside of the car and they see the dents and, you know, the mangling, and that's about it. But you really dive in deep with the crash analysis.
Correct, yeah. And I think a lot of it comes down to just understanding exactly how something works. And like you said, it's really easy to come up to a vehicle that's been in a wreck and see all these dents, scratches, bumps, whatever it might be. But where I really strive and where I get my what really makes me proud to do what I do is being able to look at these things and determining exactly, okay, this is why this dent's here, and this is why there's a scratch in this place and not a scratch in this place. And that's what it really all comes down to. And a lot of that is just due to very, very simple yet specific techniques or tests, that might be a better way to say. And sometimes, you know, I find myself in a room with just a half-full bottle of water, and I'll be moving this bottle of water in different ways, trying to create different shapes, and just watching what I would call the weight transfer, but watching the water move around the bottle in different ways and kind of using that in my head as a visual reference as, okay, well, if water moves to this part of the bottle, you know, again, saying that simulates weight transfer, okay, the weight just transferred from back to forward, the weight just transferred from left to right. And that's kind of a good visual representation for me, especially when I come up into these accident scenes, as to, okay, this is why this is here and not over there. And the other thing about that is more just taking the environment into account. Was it a curvy road? Was it a bumpy road? Road construction? Was there rain, snow, sleet? Was it a dirty road? Anything that could contribute to what might have happened, being able to take in all of those counts and try and put it together in one big puzzle is where I get my satisfaction from what I do.
So tell us about maybe some of the, you don't have to get into like specifics as far as names and all that, but maybe some examples of the actual work in action, some things that you've had an opportunity to have come your way and be presented to you where you had to really figure it out and make sense of it all. Because a lot of times, you know, when you're involved in these situations where there is a case and an accident and all of this and financial liability and all these things that are involved, there's a lot of emotion, there's a lot of, you know, confusion for people and frustration, and all these things come into play. And then having somebody like you who can be, you know, you can detach from some of that emotional aspect of it and just really get in there with a clear sense of clarity to be able to deduce what maybe the parties involved and others involved can't really deduce because they're wrapped up in the emotional aspect of what just occurred to them.
Yeah, I would say something that comes to mind in regards to what you're asking for is actually the very first case that I was ever actually brought into, what really kind of kick-started this whole movement of coaching consultations. And it was an example of a pickup truck, early 2000s pickup truck that had basically nothing in the truck bed, so just a standard generic pickup truck. And it was going around a corner. It dropped a wheel, so to say, so it put the passenger side rear wheel dropped off the edge of the road into the, you know, loose gravel, and it ended up spinning this truck full 360. And while it was spinning, it went into the oncoming lane and unfortunately ended up hitting another vehicle and caused some damage and some injuries. But what I was there for was to determine if this was negligence or was there something else that happened? Was there anything that contributed to this vehicle spinning? And at the end of the day, to me, right off the bat, it was fairly obvious, but there's always more. Again, there's always more than just what you see at surface value. So through a lot of research, through a lot of asking for advice, asking for help to try and better understand exactly what happened here, what came down to was just simply I work with lots and lots of people, whether it's from a basic driving level to professional drivers, professional race car drivers that need help with coaching. That's where I do. I work for lots of people as a coach, as a driving instructor, as a mentor. So being able to take that experience working with hundreds, thousands of people and seeing how the general reaction is when you get into a situation where the car starts to slide, how does somebody react? And having that knowledge is something that's very powerful for me as an individual, just driving on daily roads, as well as taking it to a court and being able to say, okay, I have done this with X amount of people, with thousands of people. I've seen that the general reaction time to this type of scenario is around a quarter of a second. And when you come in to a corner with speed, so this person was going about 47 miles an hour, and again, they had no weight in the bed of the truck. So naturally, pickup trucks are pretty light in the rear. They have a tendency to spin just, you know, as far as if you're going to put a number on it, you're going to be 50% more likely to spin in a pickup truck than you would be in a normal car. That's just how most pickup trucks are designed. That's how they are. And when you have this guy that dropped the wheel off the edge of the road, that sent all the weight, well, he got on the brakes, put all the weight towards the nose. That took pretty much all the weight off the rear. That initially created that fishtail. And then after you get that fishtail at around 45, 47 miles an hour, a quarter of a second is a very, very long time to kind of have that pause. If you don't react immediately, you're going to be in for a hard time. And that's basically exactly what happened here. And my job and what I came to the conclusion was just this person didn't have the necessary training to know how to react in this type of situation. So therefore, trying to avoid it would be practically impossible. And, you know, I'll be the first to admit that I went into that case knowing that the probability of coming out with a positive outcome was slim. But at the end of the day, we were able to reduce the severity of the sentencing that this person got. And I feel that I did my job, and I feel that I represented my client as best as I possibly could and put forth something that actually helped them instead of made things worse. So at the end of the day, it was a great learning experience for me, and I feel I did a good job.
You know, that's an incredible story, and thanks for sharing that. What is another example of the work in action? People love to hear examples, relatable examples. What's another one you could share?
Ooh, another one. I'll keep this one short and sweet. So long story short, there was a brake failure in this specific vehicle, and it took a while to find, but basically, the way that we came to this conclusion was we were looking at this open road, there's nobody around, and this person basically smashed into a K-wall, and they couldn't figure out why. There was a not quite a 90-degree right-hand turn, but it was something. It was a fairly sharp right-hand turn. It was pretty much a freeway off-ramp, and again, there's nobody around. It was pretty dark. It was something around 8:30, and just crashed his car, didn't know why, and wanted to just figure out exactly what happened. And this didn't go all the way to a court case. Again, this was not a judge jury kind of deal. But I was brought in to investigate exactly what happened and find the root cause. And through the skid marks on the ground from the rear tires and investigating the car and seeing that there were multiple pieces that were not only missing but that had been severed, granted, I wasn't sure if that was from the impact or from something else. That's what took most of the time trying to figure out exactly what was previously existing and what had happened due to student damage of the accident. But yeah, again, long story short, we determined that due to having lack of skid marks from any front wheels, determining that there was physically no rubber that had been flat spotted, which is what you would normally happen when you lock tires on a road while the vehicle is moving. And that's why sometimes, like if you have a car that has no ABS and you get on the brakes really hard, it skids for a little bit. After that skid, you might hear kind of like a vibration from either the front or the rear wheels. That's because there's a flat spot on them. And really, the only way to get that flat spot on them is if you either try and do that all the way around the tires, or if you have a rear-wheel drive vehicle with flat spots in the rear, you just do a burnout and kind of evens out the tires. But long story short, at that point, there's not a lot you can do. And again, we came to this conclusion that it was just brake failure due to lack of brake fluid, lack of damage to the front tires, and there was just multiple things that I kind of compiled as far as mechanical failures that had led to this point. Lack of maintenance was another big one. So things like that. Sometimes sometimes they're short and sweet as far as my investigations go, and sometimes they're a lot more in-depth. It's kind of a good example of, okay, you know, we had the first one where it did take a while. It was a fairly long, drawn-out process. And then the second one with the brake failure was, you know, we concluded everything in a week just through the evidence that we had, and the main goal of the investigation was pretty surface value, so to say. So it's it can kind of go either way, and I try and approach every case with the idea that there's always more going on that you just might think right off the bat, and we go from there.
One of the things you do that might fascinate our listeners, too, is this science-based process that you use to really determine how an accident actually occurred, and that's 3D accident reconstruction. Tell us about that. That sounds fascinating.
Yeah, so the 3D accident reconstruction side of my business is something that I'm trying to continuously grow. I'll be the first to admit that it's something that I have had to learn a lot about in a very short amount of time, and that's what I'm currently taking classes for, is to get better at the 3D side of things. But essentially what it is it's a visual presentation, a visual representation of my findings, and I think that they are very, very beneficial, not only for me, but for a client. Because it's all of these things that I find, it's all of my reports, all of my statistics, all of my diagnostics I can put together in a video and actually show somebody. And I will be the first to say, again, it's something that's such a powerful tool. It does take time. It does take a lot of effort, both on my part and the people that help me do it. But when you're actually able to say, okay, you know, this car might have had a tire blowout and that led to a spin. That's one thing, just saying it to a jury, but then being able to actually put a video together and show a car having a tire blowout and spinning is a totally different level of understanding from everybody in the room. And it's just a very, very powerful tool. It's something that I always try and leverage when I can. Granted, it's not something that might not always be necessary, but when we're able to use it, it's an incredible tool, and it's something I'm really trying to expand on for my business.
That's fantastic. What is a typical day like for you, Jason? You know, you're so busy with everything that you've got going on, which I think is awesome, but what is a typical day? Or would you say, Jim, there are no typical days. Every day is unique and different.
I would say it's a little bit of both. Sometimes it's a bit hard to plan out my day just because being a volunteer with the fire department, you never really know what can happen when a call comes down, my pager goes off, you never really know what you're going to. However, most of the time when I am working on these cases, I really try and devote everything I have to the case. It is a bit of a double-edged sword as far as it becomes my life. I'm very, very passionate about my work and what I do, and I pride myself on providing the best service I possibly can. So I'm always thinking about it. It's always on my mind. It's something I kind of eat, breathe, and sleep. So it does kind of take over my life whenever I have these cases, and it's when I'm working on them, it's, you know, I wake up in the morning and I'm always trying to figure out, okay, what's something I could have missed? It's kind of my morning is going over every possible scenario, anything that could possibly happen that I couldn't have seen right off the bat. And then usually I'll end up reaching out to some of my assets, whether it's through the legislation department, whether it's through the research and development department, tire development. There's always a million questions that I have, and it's something that I'm just a very curious guy, again, going back to kind of my core roots. And I like to figure things out, and if it's something that I can't do, then I'm going to figure out who can. And that's something I always try and leverage, and then putting together reports and proposals and stuff like that usually takes time. So usually when I have these cases, it's kind of sun up to sun down, whatever I can do for the client. And then at that point, it's just meditating to myself, figuring out if there's anything I missed.
Right. So it's it can be an arduous, tedious process, right? I mean, it takes intense focus to really, because I know when you take things on, you go all in. You give like 110% of yourself, if not more. And that's what it really takes to be able to do this, to be an expert at this, right? You've got to have this real focus and this real tenacity to get in there and not miss a trick.
Correct. Yeah, it's. I know a lot of people that do this type of work, and I try and pride myself on quality instead of quantity. My bad. I know that I don't take on as many cases as lots of other people do, and I do that on purpose just because I pride myself on providing the best that I can possibly do. I don't want to put myself in a position where I have so much going on with caseload that I can't put 100% into one specific case. I want to put 100% into everything I do, and if that means I only do 10 cases a year, for example, then that's what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do those 10 cases right. I'm going to make sure that it's something that I can stand by, that I can sign on the dotted line next to and be proud of it. So that's really what I'm all about, is I'm proud of my work. I know that it can change lives, it can affect lives, and I know that, and it's one of those things I don't take very lightly. I take it very, very seriously, and I think everybody should.
And you do, and that's what's really incredible. How does the work come your way? Are you out finding the work, or do clients find you?
I would say it's about 50-50. I pride myself on offering my services to everybody. I try not to be too exclusive as far as I'm not only going to market myself to law firms. I try and keep myself available to anybody that needs it, because at the end of the day, that's what I created the company for, is to help the people and not just a very small corner of the market. So people can find me on my website, code3consultations.com, and that's where I get most of my business from, is through my website. I'm also on a few of the expert witness directories as far as experts.com, Little League, stuff like that, kind of the major, it's like the yellow pages, so to say, of expert witnesses. It's just like a massive list of people that can help out in certain situations. So that's how I market myself most of the time, as well as just getting to know my local offices, my local juries, my local courtrooms, all that fun stuff, trying to make sure I try and market myself the best I can. And again, for me, it's more about quality instead of quantity. So if I don't get a lot of caseload for a year, that's okay. And I pride myself on trying to make sure I do my best and not just having a million cases.
Want to let our audience know, too, that you handle everything from the initial investigation to the scene recreation, depositions, testimonies, which is really incredible. It's an all-inclusive experience for your clients, and you're literally sort of taking over the heavy lifting in regard to the accident itself. So I encourage folks to make that contact with you for sure.
Yeah, for sure. It's something that I try and I do my best to, like you said, offer from 0 to 100%. I want to make sure I can take all that stress off of the client, off of anybody that's representing the client. I'll do my work and I'll make sure that I keep everybody up to date. But it's, from that point on, it's something that I'm managing, and if it's something that needs to be changed or anything that people need specific, you know, where I'm always working with people, but I try my best to offer everything so they can take it off of their plate.
Exactly right. Code 3, and that's the number 3, code3consultations.com. Again, code and then the number 3, consultations.com. Jason Uribe, expert guest here on Close Up Radio. Jason, thanks so much for joining us. Looking forward to the continuation of our conversation next week as well. But till then, thanks for stopping by Close Up Radio. Always enlightening, empowering, inspiring, and enriching when we hear the work that you do and the passion you have for it. So thanks for stopping by and sharing more of it today. Looking forward to next week.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I can't wait.
You're welcome. You take care and have a good week. And we'll chat again real soon. Jason Uribe, our very special guest from Code 3 Consultations in California. Jim Masters here, thanking you for your time this time till next time. Stay tuned. We'll be back with another great guest right here on Close Up Radio just for you. Till then, for all of us, have a great day and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.